Hello, Velo News listeners. This is Dan Cavallari, tech editor at Velo News Magazine, coming at you with another Velo News Tech Podcast. Be sure to subscribe and comment on this podcast so that you remember to come back and listen to me even more later on. Today, we're going to talk about something that I'm sure none of you have strong feelings about at all. Today, we're going to talk about e-bikes. Not controversial at all, right? Yeah, everybody's on board with e-bikes, right? Well, okay, we're going to talk about what e-bikes actually are. So be honest with yourself right now. Do you actually know what an e-bike is? Now, if your inclination is to say, oh, it's a bike with a motor, well, it's a little bit more complicated than that. And it's that complication that I really wanted to get the heart of today. I wanted to find out what exactly constitutes an e-bike, what are the real components behind it, how does it work, and what's the deal with all those batteries? So, you know, we kind of have this simplified idea in our head that an e-bike is this motorized thing that's going to rip up the trails and make everybody's life miserable and they're loud, blah, blah, blah. Having ridden them myself, I can tell you that's really not the case. But I wanted to get a more technical understanding of what they really are, so I got in touch with some folks at Bosch and had a little interview. So here's what I learned about e-bikes. Let's go to the interview. Okay, so I am on the line with Jonathan Weinert, sales and marketing manager at Bosch, to answer some of the mystical questions about e-bikes that I think really most of us We don't really understand e-bikes as they are right now, because it is such a new phenomenon and it's way too easy to pigeonhole them in the category of, oh, they're motorized bikes, they're dirt bikes, blah, blah, blah. So let's get to the truth of it. First of all, Jonathan, thanks for joining me.
Yeah. Happy to be here, Dan.
So let's jump right in. You know, we've heard a lot of terms. We've heard pedal assist, we've heard pedelec, we've heard e-bike. Is there any difference between these types of bikes? What are they?
Well, yeah, it's a great fundamental existential question. What is an e-bike? And it's not quite as simple as you would think. So it depends who you ask. If you ask the general public, and you could, as one way to ask the general public, just look on Instagram, type in the tag e-bike and look at what comes up. Mm-hmm. You will find everything from high-powered zero electric motorcycles all the way to low-powered, very bicycle-looking pedal assist electric bikes. So in the public's eye, it's really a split of anything with two wheels and an electric motor, really. However, if you ask the federal government, the federal government actually defined e-bikes in 2002, and they defined it a specific class of them. Low-speed electric bicycle means a two- or three-wheeled vehicle with fully operable pedals and an electric motor of less than 750 watts, which is 1 horsepower, whose maximum speed on a paved level surface when powered solely by such a motor while ridden by an operator who weighs 170 pounds is less than 20 miles per hour. So that's how the federal government actually defines a low-speed electric bike.
Perfectly clear, as the federal government is always used to doing, is making things crystal clear, right?
Exactly. And you'll notice in that language, there's this term solely by such a motor, mm-hmm. which when you think about a pedal assist electric bike, which is what Bosch e-bike system provides the motor for, and which is really, I think, for the bicycle industry, all the major brands today are producing some form of pedal assist e-bikes. So when you ask us, like Trek, Giant, Specialized, Bosch, Yamaha, Shimano, when you ask us what an e-bike is, we think in our minds, okay, it's a pedal assist electric bike, meaning you need to put effort into it to get some electric tailwind out of it. So to boost your human effort, and it's boosted by electric effort.
So we're really not talking about throttles anymore. I mean, I think there's this perception that there's a throttle on your e-bike and you can just rip into it like a motorcycle and start, you know, rooster tailing in corners. That's not accurate, is it?
Well, again, there's a whole part of the market that type of e-bike appeals to, and it's a much different crowd than who Trek, Giant, Specialized, and many others have been selling to. Mm-hmm. But there are still many companies that do the throttle, the throttle type electric bike. And there are many of those that look like regular bicycles, but we see more of the market shifting away from throttle, which was really popular 10 years ago. And as the technology for pedal assist electric bikes has been improving, and it's been improving quite a bit in the last few years, we see more and more companies and end consumers shifting towards pedal assist electric bikes mm-hmm. because they feel more like bicycles. And people are realizing, you know what, I don't need the throttle. I want something that's simple, intuitive to operate, and also get this health benefit from it. So yeah, we're sort of moving in the direction that Europe has started moving in 10, 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, you know, that my experience with e-bikes so far has been almost exclusively pedal assist. I do remember, you know, using some throttle style bikes, but that was so many years ago. And I guess I haven't even seen one in so long that I just assumed that that really wasn't even a thing anymore. And the pedal assist ones, you know, you do get that sense that you're riding a bike. You know, it's not like I'm just pop the pedal assist at its highest level and I'm just motoring along. You do actually pedal. You do actually still handle it like you would any other bike. So really what we're talking about is a re-education of what types of e-bikes are out there. There are several kinds, but the pedal assist seems to be sort of taking over. Does that sound accurate?
Yeah, I would say so.
Okay. So now I think, you know, obviously one of the controversies is trail access for mountain bikers and things like that. And, you know, is this a motorized vehicle and all that? But before we even dive into that, you know, I think we really do need to dive down a little bit deeper into what actually is an e-bike. And, you know, everybody knows that it's a bike with a battery and a pedal assist motor. Okay. Well, do you even know what that battery is? Do you know what that pedal assist motor does? So let's start with the battery. Let's talk batteries. What are the batteries made of? How long are they meant to last? Why are they the choice for e-bikes right now?
Okay, so I'm just talking about the Bosch Power Pack, which is made up of many lithium ion cells, and these are standard lithium ion cells that are used by many different manufacturers, many different types of applications, including automotive applications, power tool applications. So this is standard, proven, mature lithium ion battery technology. We integrate those cells into the battery pack together with a battery management system, which protects the battery, really. It tells it, oh, don't discharge too much. Don't charge too much. Keeps it in this perfect range to ensure long life from the battery and also safe operation because you don't want the battery to overheat. So yeah, with the battery, that's the key technology inside it. Lithium ion, and there are many different flavors of lithium ion battery technology, but yeah. The industry,
this is a standard. I mean, we've all heard of lithium ion batteries at this point. I mean, if you own a drill, you probably have a lithium ion battery in your house already. So this is not exactly, we're not reinventing the wheel, we're using existing technology for these batteries, correct?
Exactly, standard 18650 cells, yeah, that have been used for years. And keep in mind, these cells keep getting better and better in terms of energy density. So I'm talking about how much energy can they store for a given weight and a given size. So over the last few years, the batteries at the same sort of energy capacity, they keep getting a little bit smaller and a little bit lighter. And so, yeah.
Not in terms of like when I'm out riding, you know, how long are they going to last, but how long is a battery's life expectancy? I mean, is it 2 years, 10 years? You know, how long can I expect one of these e-bike batteries to last me?
Again, it depends on how well you treat it and how hard you use it. So Bosch batteries, for instance, they're warranted for 2 years or 500 cycles, 500 charging cycles. If you think about 500 charging cycles, that's roughly 20 to 25,000 miles. So that just gives you a rough idea how long they're expected to use if you're using it all the time. Of course, if you live in a really hot environment like Arizona, you leave your batteries out in the blazing sun every day, day in, day out, that's going to chip away at its life. Same as if you live in Quebec and you leave your e-bike out or in the garage overnight during winter and the battery gets really cold, it's kind of like a pet. It doesn't like to be in super hot conditions or super cold conditions. So rule of thumb, treat your battery like a pet.
Mm-hmm. So basically, if I'm a really lazy bike owner in Scottsdale, Arizona, I'm probably going to get a shorter battery life out of it. And same in the cold climate, just like that.
Yeah, and that's consistent with what electric vehicle owners have been experiencing as well. So same fundamental rules apply.
Okay, so now assuming you can treat it like a pet, so no, you can't go smashing somebody's window in if you see an e-bike in a hot car. Don't do that. But
right.
I mean, that was a terrible joke. Not. That was really bad. Somebody should call me on that. Don't let that slide, guys. That's terrible. But assuming you take general care of it, and don't leave it in situations where it won't thrive, you'll get a few years out of this at least, right? So now, what happens to that battery when it's basically beyond its usefulness? Where, are they recyclable? What does a consumer do? Does he have to buy an aftermarket one to replace it? Talk a little bit about the lifespan and really the death of a battery.
Yeah, the death of a battery. So a sad, very sad moment in the e-bike's life when the battery goes kaput. Mm-hmm. So what happens? Yeah, it's sort of a gradual death. Like maybe you've experienced this with your cell phone or your computer, but you find, okay, when I first started riding, I got 100 miles out of a charge, and now I'm only getting, I don't know, 20 or 30 miles out of a charge after several years of riding. Okay, at that point, you flip the battery over and you look on the label and you'll see, at least on the Bosch system, Bosch batteries, you'll see this 1-800 call to recycle. And this is the agency that we work with to ensure that our batteries are picked up and go to the great, reincarnation, the great reincarnator of batteries. Call to Recycle will pick it up and make sure that it gets properly recycled. And most lithium ion batteries today are actually recycled. I don't know the exact percentage, but the industry, lithium ion battery industry, has done a pretty good job ensuring that they don't end up in landfills. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you would even know the answer to this question, but what does that recycling process look like? Do the batteries get reused, or are they broken down and used for parts?
They're broken down. Okay. Yeah. Okay. For automotive batteries that are recycled, some see a secondary use, like, but where they don't get completely grinded up, but typically the cells get grinded up and sorted out, and the materials all make it back into the supply chain, the raw material supply chain.
Okay, so we've morbid fashion, we really focused on the death first, but let's talk about the birth of a battery. One of the talking points I always see about e-bikes is, you think you're so environmentally conscious, you see it with electric cars too. You think you're so environmentally cautious. Where do you think, these factories get their energy to make these batteries? Well, I really don't know anything about how batteries are made. So I honestly can't answer that question. How is a battery made? Where are they made? Where are your batteries made? How are they designed? What's the environmental impact of them?
Okay. So, first of all, most of the world's highest quality 18650 lithium ion cells are made by three big companies, LG Chem, Sony, and Sanyo. And there are also many studies out there that look at the life cycle analysis, energy usage, pollution, resulting from battery production. And it's really just a small part of the overall energy use and the potential emissions from an e-bike, that initial manufacturing stage. So the overall environmental impacts of an e-bike, when you consider the manufacturing of the lithium-ion battery, is just a small fraction of an automobile. So if you're comparing these two forms of transportation, electric bike to an automobile, the electric bike is far superior in terms of its carbon footprint.
Mm-hmm. I suppose that wasn't really a fair question. I mean, I feel like, you know, that argument, it really, really comes from folks that are arguing that that electric cars are not any more environmentally friendly. And I think, you know, just given the size of e-bikes, clearly the environmental footprint is going to be a lot smaller. But I still think there's a valid concern about, you know, what are these batteries, where are they coming from? You know, how they produced and where do they end up, you know, so that life cycle of a battery is really a key talking point against e-bikes. And I think there's also a lot of misinformation. I mean, like you're saying, I mean, I think we can't really think of the e-bike battery as its own thing. It's part of a grander thing that's, you know, car batteries and power tool batteries and even, you know, certain vacuums and things like that. And I think that's the bigger concern. So again, I think it comes back to the point that we're really, you know, we're not reinventing the wheel with batteries on e-bikes. It's all technology. And I think there's some solace to be taken knowing that a lot of them get recycled. And I don't know if that's, I mean, I don't really understand, you know, when a battery is recycled, and maybe you can clarify this, when a battery is recycled, it's broken down, you know, it's essentially, you know, turned into something else. But what does that really mean? I mean, is it physical parts? I mean, what is this lithium ion substance, or, you know, what happens to those cells?
Well, so they're breaking into their components. And one of the most precious components in the battery cell is this lithium material, which is not, it's not universally available, but there's huge mines in China and South America, and there's even some mines in, I believe, Nevada, where they're actually mining for lithium. Some lithium ion batteries also use cobalt and magnesium, I believe. And the cobalt is, I think it's considered a rare/precious material, and that supply is fairly limited, but the amounts of cobalt and even lithium that is part of the entire battery cell is a small part of the weight, the total weight of that cell. So there's other things in there like the metal casing, the graphite that makes up the other the anode of the battery. The cathode is lithium. The anode is graphite. So graphite is just carbon, which is a very innocuous material.
Right. Innocuous. I like that word. That's often applied to my articles as well. No. So, you know, basically what I'm taking away from this is batteries are magic and we should just accept it. But let's talk about the batteries.
Skeptical acceptance.
Yeah.
It's okay to have some healthy skepticism. Is there a lithium cartel in the world? I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe.
You said a lot of fancy sciencey things, and I was lost. I should mention, I failed chemistry in high school, so I'm a complete loss here.
So I can just throw anything at you, and you'll buy it.
You could have said any words.
Yeah. Unobtainium is the key ingredient.
Oh yes, I've heard of it.
Cells.
Yeah, I've heard of it. But let's talk more on a base level from a consumer standpoint. Obviously, a big talking point is, you know, the batteries are massive. Why are they so big, and are they going to get smaller?
Okay, great question. And if you ask somebody, maybe you ask a a teenager today. Yeah, why are the batteries so massive? These things are big and bulky, especially when you compare it to the kid's Santa Cruz bike, regular bike that's super light. But if you go back to the 90s, then you would be like, oh my God, these lithium ion batteries today are so light and so small, and they're integrated into the frame. It's amazing. Because if you go back to the mid 90s, the first e-bike that really hit the US was Lee Iacocca's e-bike and Curry Tech's EV Warrior, and they use lead acid batteries, huge bulky lead acid batteries, and also nickel cadmium batteries. Cadmium, not the most environmentally friendly material. Lead, also not the most environmentally friendly. And since the mid 90s, battery energy density has really improved, by orders of magnitude.
Mm-hmm. Aside from the fact that, I can't be the only one that just had like a shiver of terror when you said, let's go back to the mid 90s. Because I was like, oh man,
good times.
I lived through high school. I don't want to go back. So we now understand that batteries may look big to us now, but they're actually quite small. But, you know, I think any brand worth its salt is looking at making these batteries smaller, even smaller than they are now. Is that in the cards? And when will we see that, and in what form?
Yeah. So as these battery companies that I mentioned, like Samsung and LG Chem and Sony, as they innovate more on the battery materials that are used, they will either get smaller or they will keep the same amount of energy capacity. They will either get smaller and keep the same amount of energy capacity, or they will actually stay the same size and you just get more energy sort of in the tank. So you may be able to go farther with the exact same size than you would have 2 years ago.
So it's a bit of a trade-off. You can really, because really those are the two drawbacks, right? Is the size of the battery and the battery life. And so at this stage in the game, it sounds like it's still a bit of a compromise, a give and take to minimize the size while maximizing battery life. Does that sound right?
Minimize the size while maximizing battery, I would say range. So how far can you go with one charge?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you see some bike manufacturers are going in one direction, creating a bigger and bigger tank, kind of bigger gas tank is one way to think about it,
mm-hmm.
To go farther. And some manufacturers are saying, okay, actually, we just need a small battery to keep the bike really nimble and lightweight and feel even more like a mountain bike.
Mm-hmm.
So two different design approaches, and it kind of depends on what type of e-bike it's being applied to.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a commuter bike or is it a electric mountain bike?
I see. You mentioned something that I never, ever thought I would hear mentioned on the Velo News Tech podcast, and that's Lee Iacocca. Let's talk a little bit about the evolution of e-bikes. What were the first ones like, and how have they changed over the years?
So if you talk to some of the bike dealers that were around in the mid 90s, one reason why they were so skeptical over the last few years, one reason why they've been so skeptical of this big e-bike craze now that's hitting America is they're like, wait, we've seen this before. We know how it ends. It's terrible. The early experience was these e-bikes, not only were they heavy and they sometimes propelled the rider when they didn't want to be propelled, or they had this sort of lag in response time, which was kind of scary for riders, but they also didn't work very well. They were notoriously unreliable. So bad experience for consumers, but even worse experience for the dealers, because these consumers would bring the bike back and the bike shop couldn't get the support they needed to actually fix it. And it required soldering and it required a lot of skills that most bike shops didn't have at the time. Now the whole process of service for e-bikes has gotten way simpler, at least for Bosch e-bike systems. It's just swap and replace. There's a diagnostic tool, just like with your car. You read an error code, or the shop mechanic reads an error code. It says, oh, the battery's faulty. swap it, send it back, and we'll send you a new one. No need to open anything up, solder wires, and take things apart. So the experience for dealers is way easier now. And so the dealers are finally like, oh, I sell a bike and it doesn't come back. Mm-hmm. Oh, I like that. Mm-hmm. And if it does come back, it's easy to fix.
Sure, sure. And so some of those early ones, it seems like they were pretty plagued with problems, and the more modern ones, probably not perfect, but definitely getting better. What's the evolution next? I mean, I think one of the reasons that a lot of people are hesitant to invest in e-bikes is a lot of the same reasons that people don't always run out and buy the latest iPhone. It's like, oh, they're releasing the newest and hottest. That's going to be the newest and hottest for the next, 6 months. And then somebody's going to come out with something right. else.
Exactly. I
mean, what do you say to the crowd like me that's, you know, got a 5-year-old, 4-year-old iPhone, you know, and you know, we want to see what's next. We want to see them get lighter and more efficient. Is that going to happen? Is it worth waiting, or is this as good as it's going to be for a while?
Well, yeah, it depends your appetite for, So I'll just say the pace of innovation in the e-bike industry is still really fast. And every year there are like with Bosch, for instance, we recently came out with our power tube integrated battery, which can be integrated into the down tube. It's integrated inside the frame, so you don't even see it anymore. So customers that maybe bought an e-bike the year before, they might feel like, oh gosh, I wish I would have waited for the power tube, or wish I would have waited for the new Kiox, which is a color display instead of having the older Intuvia display. Not only Bosch, but other suppliers as well, the pace of innovation is still really fast. I guess that's a trade-off between waiting and just getting what's the best today. And it'll still be great for years to come, just like your iPhone from 4 years ago. It's still pretty awesome.
Yeah.
You can use the apps. And
mine's not very awesome, but that's okay.
crack screen.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it barely turns on. Battery life is about 4 minutes, you know.
Wow.
But there's nothing on the horizon that's mind-blowingly, you know, it's not, oh, a flying e-bike is coming, you know, it's not something on the horizon that people should be like, oh, well, I'll just wait until that technology is ready to go.
No, I wouldn't say anything like there's just going to be this huge step change in the technology next year, so we'll wait. Every year there's new, I'd say, incremental improvements. I think one big trend in e-bikes today is this connectivity aspect. Mm-hmm. And for instance, this Kiox display that we came out with, that's Bosch's first step into connectivity, where you can connect yourself to the e-bike. And that's done through a heart rate sensor, a heart rate monitor that you might wear on your wrist or on your chest. You can actually see your heart rate on your bike while you're riding, see the power that you're putting into the bike. So that's just like the first step in connectivity, and more connectivity features will come. Uh-huh.
If I was a sci-fi dork, I'd be making so many jokes right now. But I'm not that learned in the cyborg Terminator realm.
That's where we're going.
Yeah,
that's
I apologize to my audience. I don't even have a good bad joke to tell right now. All right, so let's talk a little bit about the actual function. And we've talked about the battery, and we've talked about, you know, the connectivity and all that. But we're still talking about this vague term, this motor, this pedal assist motor. How does that actually work?
Okay, so we call it the drive unit. It's an electric drive, which has an electric motor inside, but also some gearing and electronics that control the motor and sensors. So how does that all fit together to give you this electric tailwind experience? That's the goal, by the way, to make it feel like a tailwind. So the way it works is, there are three sensors on the bike. One is a torque sensor that is integrated into the drive unit that feels how hard you're pedaling. Another is the wheel speed sensor to measure how fast you're going. And then the other one is the cadence sensor that also measures how fast you're pedaling. With those three sensor inputs, We feed those into the electronics, measuring at 1,000 times a second. And that measurement tells the electric motor how much assistance to add on top of your own pedal power, your own human pedal power. And it does it in a way that it's very gradual in and gradual off, so that it just feels natural. So the magic is these precise sensors, the electronics, and a fast response electric motor, a permanent magnet synchronous electric motor.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So when I apply torque to my pedals, what exactly does the motor do? I mean, is it kicking in? I mean, I'm trying to get a visual on this. In other words, like I know how a car works.
Take some power onto this crankshaft, and then you feel stronger. That's the end effect. With that extra assist from the electric motor, your crankshaft is. One way to think about it is that, like, for every rotation, for every crank rotation, you're getting like two or three pedal strokes of power, or of extra boost. So it's basically 50% boost to 300% boost.
Okay, and is this the talk about the motor? In a physical sense, is it a brushless motor or is it something else? It is a brushless motor.
Motor with permanent magnets inside.
Okay. Can you just explain for those who've never heard of a brushless motor, what exactly that is?
Yeah. A brushless motor is most electric motors today are brushless, and it basically is a lower maintenance motor. Because without brushes that wear down over time, it uses something we call electric commutation to operate. So the main thing to know about brushless motors is lower maintenance, higher efficiency.
Mm-hmm. So you can Google brushless motor to kind of get a sense of how it actually works. But the takeaway is that essentially it should last longer than electric motors of yore.
Yes, right. The electric motors of yore that had the brushes.
Okay. Let's talk about speed regulators. Is this just like a meet the federal guidelines sort of thing where you top out and you won't get any more assist at a certain speed? Or is there a reason that we have to have regulators on these, aside from the regulations of the federal government?
Yeah, it is really driven by government regulation. And there are two, for pedal assist electric bikes, there are two classes, class one and class three. And in the very early part of this discussion, we talked about the federal definition of e-bikes, but every state has their rights to define e-bikes for how they are used on the streets, and because they have the responsibility of maintaining safe streets. So what we did first, or what People for Bikes in the industry did with California, is we pitched California a three-class system. Class one is pedal assist, and it only goes up to 20 miles per hour. So regulated at 20, which is crystal clear, consistent with that federal definition of 20 miles per hour. But we also recognize that that there is a need and a demand for higher speed electric bikes. And so there's also class three pedal assist, which assists you up to 28 miles per hour. And the reason 28, it's really based on the European law, which set 45 kilometers per hour as the speed limit for speed bikes. And with this sort of elastic term in the federal Consumer Product Safety Commission definition of e-bikes, the states are comfortable with allowing both class one and class three. And many allow class two as well. So class two is 20 miles per hour and throttle operated.
How does the speed regulator work? What actually kicks in to cut the speed? Is it just a magnet or something, a sensor in the bike?
It's electronics. It's just software. So we talked about the three sensors. The wheel speed sensor feeds information to the electronics, and the software is written such that if the wheel speed is over 20 miles per hour, cut the power off. Mm-hmm.
I have a question that I already know the answer to, but I'm assuming our listeners who have never used an e-bike, which I would imagine is the vast majority of listeners, have never experienced it. So what happens when I top out and I'm no longer getting that assist? Does it all of a sudden feel like dead weight and I'm pushing this, you know, pushing the pedals in this 50-pound bike or whatever?
Well, with our new Active Line Plus drive units, you will find that when you go above 20 miles per hour, it's just like riding a normal bicycle. Yeah, if you're going uphill, you might feel the additional 12 pounds of weight that the battery plus motor add to the bike. But in terms of resistance in the motor itself, with this new Active Line Plus, you will not feel it at all.
Okay.
It's negligible.
Sure. And inertia is on your side at that point. I mean, you're already going 20 miles an hour.
Exactly. Right.
So here's one more question on sort of the other end of that. And we'll try to wrap this up because we're getting to the end here. But I think one of the big concerns that consumers have when it comes to e-bikes, especially on e-mountain bikes, is I'm out in the middle of the woods. I'm 3 hours into my ride. Maybe I didn't top off my charge the day before, and all of a sudden I'm 5 miles from the parking lot and I got a dead battery. What's Bosch doing to sort of address that concern, and what happens when the battery does die and you're far away?
Okay. So what Bosch is doing to address that concern is we're developing, lighter chargers. So, well, actually the charger won't help you when you're way out in the middle of the woods, but, I would say that what we are trying to do is develop bikes with the capability to have actually two batteries. So we've got this dual battery solution where now you can have two batteries and yeah, so it doubles your range. So you will less likely to run into that problem. But really another way to look at it is, okay, if you're out in the middle of the woods and you run out of juice, okay, now you're going to get a really great workout on your way back home. It's a blessing. Uh-huh, it's a blessing uh-huh, in disguise. Uh-huh.
Okay.
But okay. Right. Wink, wink. Mm. But actually what we're doing in Europe, because e-mountain bikes in Europe, it's I'd say it's going gangbusters. Many, many ski resorts are adopting e-bikes and integrating them into their tourist packages. And now they're actually starting to install charging stations at the tops of some of these beautiful resort villages or down in the valley, where if people want to do these like cross valley expeditions, they can go to one of these villages, charge while they're having a coffee or a lunch, and you know, top off or just get some quick juice and then go on their adventure. So the charging infrastructure, I think we'll see more and more of that over the coming years.
Okay, and you mentioned a lighter charger. What's the story with that?
Yeah, so we have a compact charger. So if you do go on a big adventure and yeah, two different chargers, standard, compact. Compact's just a little bit lighter, smaller, it fits into your, you know, camelback. And if you are going somewhere that has electricity available, you can top off your battery while you're, you know, hanging out at the restaurant or a campsite that happens to have solar power available.
Yeah. Right. I think cafe owners everywhere just saw a lot of wires running in and out of their restaurant in their heads.
Possible. Yeah. Yeah.
So Jonathan, we've talked a lot about the battery and the motor. Is there anything I'm missing that the audience needs to know about e-bikes that perhaps would change their minds about it or give them a better perspective about what e-bikes are and what they're capable of and what the future is like? Is there anything we didn't talk about?
Yeah, probably the last thing to touch is on how e-bikes are used. And what we find is that, so first of all, e-bike riders, and there have been several surveys and studies on this from Portland State University, that e-bike owners tend to use their e-bike more than they thought they would. And more than their regular bicycle. They typically ride, I think, roughly three times as often as bicycle riders, and they also go farther. So yeah, you probably expect that, because an e-bike lowers the barriers to cycling, whether you're on a, you know, trying to commute to and from work, or if you are just doing errands around the house, or errands around your town, or taking your kids to work. So e-bikes are getting more people, getting people to cycle more. They're also bringing in more people in general into the cycling world, bringing people that maybe hadn't stepped foot in a bike shop in 10, 20 years. They're coming into a bike shop to get an e-bike. So it's just making cycling more accessible to a much wider part of the population.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that's advantageous for a lot of reasons, even if you have no intention of ever sitting on an e-bike yourself. I mean, there's power in numbers. I mean, there's really...
Exactly, yeah. Right.
I mean, that changes things in terms of infrastructure. It changes things in terms of trail access. You know, when there's more people in the conversation, you know, there's all of a sudden a bigger swing in our direction.
Exactly.
Hypothetically, at least. I mean, that's what we would hope, right?
Yeah, yeah. As our elected officials see more and more people using that bike lane, cutting through their city, then they realize, okay, this is, first of all, it's a well-used asset. It's improving traffic in our city. It's improving health. I mean, e-bikes can solve three big problems that America has: climate change, congestion, and obesity, mm-hmm. in one fell swoop.
Sure. That's a pretty big promise. I think you're probably right in some sense. I mean, honestly, you know, it's not just limited to e-bikes, but I think that's a catalyst, and it's making it easier for people to understand that bikes can do this for them and can really improve things.
Exactly. And it does totally apply to regular bicycles as well.
Sure.
Bicycles are perfect, but they don't bring in everybody.
Right.
And some people are still intimidated by just a normal bicycle.
Right.
Or,
oh man, I can't wait to read the Twitter war you just started.
Well,
Jonathan, thanks very much for joining me today. I really appreciate your time, and I'm sure we'll end up talking in the near future again as things evolve even more.
Dan, it's been a real pleasure. I enjoyed it.
Right, and to all you listening today, as always, if you have questions or comments about this podcast or recommendations for anything you'd like me to cover on the Velo News Tech podcast, please do tweet at me at Brown Tie Dan, or feel free to comment on Facebook and let me know what you think about e-bikes, their future, and our conversation today about all things e-bikes. Thank you again for listening.